Talk is a weekly dose of inspiration and encouragement from the Tonic Health family and friends on topics such as mental health and well-being. Funded by the National Lottery Communities Fund. I'm Amber Sinclair, and I'll be your weekly host, taking you on a voyage of discovery and inspiration, exploring a wide range of mental health and well-being subjects with weekly guests who will share with us their advice, their knowledge, and maybe some ideas on the day-to-day issues we're all facing in a post-pandemic world. I'm Amber Sinclair. I'm a musician, a teacher, and a single mum, and I have a degree in performing arts. I pursued a career in the arts until I had my son, George, and now I teach instruments and singing locally. I've just started the Rock School Bus project that will take music experiences to the young people in isolated rural areas of South Lincolnshire, providing some much-needed life back into the communities. But for now, I'm your host. I'm not an expert, but I have suffered with poor mental health in my past, and I work every day on my well-being. So I'm hoping to learn something from our guests, and I'm passionate about reaching out so that no one feels alone in their struggle. Because life is tough, particularly right now. But perhaps this podcast will help someone, somehow. So our guest today is Barbara Mayhew of Phoenix Business and Training Consultancy. As she's just told me, she's Lincolnshire born and bred. She's a specialist in HR consultancy, workplace training and positive and health and wellbeing in Lincolnshire with over 25 years of experience. Welcome, Barbara. Nice to meet you.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Not at all. So tell us a little bit more about yourself, because in the title there's words there even that I don't understand.
No problem. Yes, Lincolnshire born and bred. For the last 16 and a half years, I've worked in the construction industry as a senior manager, a human resource manager. But for many years prior to that, I've always had a passion for positive mental and physical well-being. So part of my job as a human resource manager was supporting over 200 people across 5 branches every day with regards to all the generalist human resources, but health and well-being as well in particular. A few years ago, I got the opportunity to become a mental health first aider. I grasped that opportunity, went along and found that the course was extremely inspiring to me. And it also helps you find out a lot about yourself, as well as being given a toolbox to be able to support other people. So for a few years there, I was supporting as a mental health first aider within the business. And then I got a fantastic opportunity to become an instructor trainer with Mental Health First Aid England. So I grasped that opportunity and went and became a trainer. And I've been training people now for several years, going into different industries in corporate situations, training mental health first aiders for business, and also in community and individuals. So I've also offered open groups as well. And this was all alongside my full-time role. Just over a year ago, obviously COVID struck. My role became working from home as a human resource manager. And then the word furlough came around and my job role was furloughed. So bearing in mind 16 and a half years within the industry, it was poignant that I then had 16 weeks of furlough. Then I got that telephone call saying, unfortunately, due to restructuring the company, your job role is being made redundant. So obviously, mental health and well-being has been prevalent over the last 12 months, even more so than ever. Working from home and then people being put on furlough obviously has a massive roller coaster of emotions that people are going through. A lot of people are working from home alone. And then we've got the term, the slogan that came out, we've got to socially distance. To me, socially distance is the wrong word. It should be physically distance, because a lot of people have taken socially distance down to the letter and stopped speaking to people and stopped that interaction. So I was going through the roller coaster of emotions of having supported so many people over the years within my role to then become furloughed. So obviously you've then got the restriction on what you can do within your job role. And then redundancy came to my door. Yes, I went through another series of emotions. And at the end of the day, I couldn't control the decision, but what I could control is how I responded to that redundancy. So I sat down, gave myself a good talking to, and thought, right, Barbs, what can we do? So I looked at all my qualifications, my experience, and decided I was going to launch my own business. So out of the ashes of redundancy came Phoenix Business and Training Consultancy Limited. And you will see, if you've looked at my logo, I'm passionate about orange and I'm passionate about bumblebees. So it's all incorporated in my company logo. So probably not the best time to launch a business and a scary time out there, but I wanted to turn what was could have been perceived as a negative into a positive.
Absolutely. I think that will resonate with a lot of people, because a lot of people don't have the inner strength for that at the moment. It is about turning it on its head. I did exactly the same thing and suddenly had the time to generate those ideas that had been buzzing around my head for so long, and to actually say, hang on a minute, I can do that. I know what people need in this particular, in my specialist area of music. Let's really knuckle down and get on with it. So the company is everything that you're experienced in and everything you're passionate about.
Yes.
And you're going to be moving forward now with that, so that you won't, will you be working as a consultant for other companies then?
Yes, I was lucky that a little bit of advertising that I've done, launching my website, Facebook, etc., I managed to secure some clients quite quickly, and also from support network as well, from people that I'd worked with before, getting a telephone call saying, Barbs, I've got this company I'm working with, they could do with your specialism, escalated that way, which is absolutely fantastic. I've always had a passion for a holistic approach, because there's no health without mental health. You need your physical and your mental health as a balance. And yeah, I'm qualified human resource manager, qualified in some complementary therapies, as well as mental health first aid licensed instructor trainer. And a few years back, I did my teaching qualification, because that's where my passion lies. So I put everything into the pot, and that's where Phoenix came out of. And 7 months down the line, last month, I also launched a separate part of my business called Inspired by Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I'm now supporting people across the UK with coaching and mentoring, whether that be for health and well-being, whether that be for job searching. And it's for a range of different people, those that are maybe have only lost their jobs a few weeks ago, or those that have got long-term health and well-being needs, or maybe complex needs, supporting people with autism and ADHD, and basically coaching and mentoring. And something I've been passionate about as well is, during the first lockdown, I launched check-in and chat. So as a mental health first aider, I put it out there that if anybody wanted to check in and chat, I was here and could support and could be a listening ear. So my business is evolved, but it's taken for everything that I've got a passion for and delivered it, because going through the journey that I've gone through over the last 12 months in particular, I personally believe and share the message that you need to do what makes you happy, and you need to be true to yourself and just be you. Because a lot of being in a corporate world, you are the way they expect you to be, and a lot of you gets left behind.
It's the way you need to be in that situation as well, isn't it? To be able to cope with the pressure, to be able to cope with the professionalism that you have to show no matter how you're feeling, that sort of thing. It's almost akin to a career in performance, which is my background. And you find that you've just been performing to yourself for years.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But it is, you tend to leave a lot of you at the door when you go into work. And the fact is that if you haven't got all, for want of expression, your ducks in order, if you're not happy in the things that you're doing, if your environment's not right for you, if your physical and mental and well-being are not balanced, all those other external factors, if you're not happy within your work, that also has a detrimental effect to your health and well-being. And I think working within the construction industry, it came to the forefront a few years ago because of employees, not just in the company that I was working in, but in the companies that I'd gone into and supported and training. They were experienced employees that are having real poor mental health and well-being. And obviously construction is a male-dominated environment.
And balance, maybe.
Yeah. If you look at some of the statistics that come out in relation to construction, they're quite shocking if you're not aware of it. But there's every day there's two people out of the construction industry that take their own lives
in this country.
Yes, definitely. Every day, every working day, two construction workers take their own life. Quite a lot of the time it's in the lower skilled trades, but it's to do with work-life balance. And also it's that education. It's that changing it's using the correct terminology of things that we use. And it's leaving behind that pull your socks up, man up, get on with it kind of situation. And a lot of work has been done over the last 4, 5, 6 years to actually try and educate people to change that terminology and to open that conversation and open that dialogue. But still, men are reluctant to come forward.
There's quite a lot. The NHS have done quite a lot, haven't they, to be fair to them? To really change is the word that I remember from the slogan with the little people in colours.
Yes.
Change for Life, I think it was called, the campaign.
Yes, there is.
And that was to do with physical health, but also mental health as well, about getting outside, getting fresh air. The construction workers particularly, are they... Do you think they're suffocated by a male-dominated mental attitude, or does the fact that they're low-skilled, the lack of funds, they've got to work so many more hours maybe to earn a certain amount to keep them afloat?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of factors, but I think it's educating the industry in particular that it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to talk about your mental health.
Do you think they ever will, though, on a building site? Is this their hope for them? They're so stuffed about not talking about feelings and how other people talk about feelings, and girls and women, they talk about feelings and all this.
There are more conversations happening. There's more, like you said, there's more campaigns. Mind do an awful lot. Mental Health First Aid England do. Public Health England. You've got your Mates in Mind campaign. There's lots of men's sheds coming up around. I know Tonic Health, they've got a men's shed. There's also the Man Gang. There's lots and lots of proactive people. But I'm still seeing, like only last week did I read or listen really to a video on LinkedIn where this lovely chap had been so strong about sharing his journey and with his mental health and the responses that he got, and some of them from senior managers in companies saying, oh, it will basically, you've shot yourself in the foot there by being open about your situation. Why have you done that? You're not going to get promotion and things going forward. I'm sorry, but he was so strong to deliver that message. And that's the kind of message we need to continue. Mental ill health is responsible for 72 million working days lost every year. It has a massive financial impact. It's estimated at over £105 billion per year. And every day, one in six working adults have symptoms associated with mental ill health.
Yeah.
So, like, worldwide issues, there's 792 million people worldwide affected by mental health.
And they're just the ones that we know about.
Exactly. And when I deliver the mental health first aid training, that's what I say. These are the people that have come forward and have been a counted statistic. How many people have we got out there that haven't come forward and haven't spoken? Men aged between 40 and 49 still have the highest suicide rates in the UK. And we all know that the statistics show that females come out higher, but it's only because the men still do not talk. And I know,
astounds me that
I know, and trying to get that across there, and changing the mindset for senior managers and company directors to see that if you've got someone that is living every day with anxiety or with depression, they are dealing with an awful lot before they even get through the door to come into the office.
And people And in my experience, and I do come across a bit anti-men sometimes, so I do have to be very careful, but under management of men in the past, I've actually been off for stress, anxiety and depression. But of course, when they send you off, they send you stress. And this was working in a school environment. And when I came back to part working, 2.5, 3 days, it was all afternoons, I remember. And the head came over and said, "Oh, you know, how are you getting on?" I said, "Oh, do you know what?" I said, "I think this to me is more manageable than I was struggling. I was really struggling before, but this part-time time, I think it's really suiting me actually. It's going to be a real struggle to up my hours." And he actually said, "Yes, of course it is. Everyone would rather be part-time. Everyone would rather be on the golf course every afternoon. I would." And I just thought, this is 2000 and what would it have been? 16, 17? Really? You still say things like that? You still think things like that? And I've been on a massive journey, but he clearly hadn't.
No.
But how do you get to people like him?
By continuously educating, Mental Health First Aid England are campaigning to have one mental health first aider as a minimum in every business and every school going forward. And I know there's lots of money being put out there by the government to support mental health initiatives, and it needs to continue. And there is a lot of work going on there. Even if you just look locally in Spalding, the amount of different groups, Tonic Health, the amount of other groups there are that are being supportive and opening up that dialogue, whether it by having walking groups or running groups, and talking, when we get just talking, exactly, it's just talking. And when we obviously get out of these restrictions that are on us at the moment, there'll be physical face-to-face groups that come back. And people are doing that because they've got their own lived experience. When I deliver the training courses, most of the people that come along to become qualified mental health first aiders have some kind of lived experience, whether it be themselves or within their family. Yeah. And there's a lot of mental health courses out there, a lot of training courses. But what I can say, and I'm confident about saying, is Mental Health First Aid England, it's licensed, it's accredited, and it's being put together alongside Public Health England to make sure that it's got a balanced approach. It is an extremely emotive topic, and there are lots of emotions that come up throughout the programme. And that's one thing that I'm quite passionate about, is I could deliver this training online, and I could have done it throughout the lockdown, but I chose not to, because I know how emotive the topic is, and I have a passion for this and a passion for supporting people to achieve and be successful and have positive mental health and well-being. And if I'm training someone to be a mental health first aider, I want to be there for them. I want to be able to have that safe, non-judgmental conversation with them in a safe environment and support them through that process, because even on this training course, it can bring things up. And it has brought up some absolutely amazing conversations and open up dialogue between people. And especially with you're delivering the training within a corporate environment, you've got new connections there and understanding. And it is all about education, and it's terminology as well. It's using the correct terminology. So if we look at things like suicide, how many times do you hear people say that person's committed suicide? Committing suicide, it's not to be used. It is not an offence to take your, a criminal offence to take your own life.
But that's come from religion, hasn't it? You see, it's
death by suicide or death by own hand, not committed. And I still cringe because social media portray people with mental ill health and well-being as being violent. And it's not the case. People are so strong that live with anxiety and depression, and you can be totally driven, motivated and passionate and still have depression. You can be bubbly, vibrant, extrovert and have anxiety. Yeah. But we need to know more and understand more about mental health. And we are still individuals. We are still that person. How many times do you hear people say that person's schizophrenic? No, that person is Bob, Joe, Anna, Ted, whoever. That they are living with that condition. Yeah. And it's just simple things like that and raising awareness. One thing that I started doing within my role as HR was just feeding out, trickling out little bits of information. There's an awful lot of wellness days out there and things that you can get people involved in, but it's just leaving little bits of information and sharing that, so that if someone's making a cup of tea, they can read a booklet that you've put on the side or pinned up a poster on the back of a toilet door. And it's all about doing things like that and trying to change people's mindset, because it's our frame of reference. It's our window on the world that gives us those judgmental thoughts, if you like. And it's how we're brought up, and it's our peers, the education and the environment we're brought up in.
And our experiences.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all about changing that window on the world and our mindset and being and listening. If you are dealing with someone, supporting someone that is going through a mental health crisis, it's all about listening and listening to what they want and supporting them to make an informed decision.
I find that people, we talked briefly before we started talking on recording the podcast, we talked about how you don't want those pauses, those awkward pauses. And I think people in life, I know my mum was a terrible one for it, just couldn't leave a silence, just couldn't leave a... It was just, again, it was just the way she was brought up. It was an awkward silence. But actually, when you're talking to someone who needs to offload, you've got to be so careful what you say.
They will remember everything. If they are going through a crisis situation, they will remember everything that you say. It's all about listening. It's all about letting that period of silence. If you've got a situation where someone is actually hearing voices, imagine what it's like for someone hearing voices, hearing you firing questions at them, and then you trying to formulate a response. And that's why a period of silence is okay. And it is all about listening. It's all about opening up that dialogue, and it's all about asking twice. The other week, I don't know whether you saw it, but Roman Kemp did his Our Silent Emergency program, the documentary where... he lost his producer. His producer took his life. And I only know him as Director Joe off Capital Radio. And Roman Kemp did this documentary and spoke to a number of different boys, young men, his own family, excuse me, his mum and dad. And he opened up the dialogue about how he had felt over the years and how he'd struggled with his mental health and well-being. And the fact that he would have listened, but he didn't see the signs and the symptoms. And again, these group of young lads, they lost their best mate. And they couldn't see that this was going to happen. And it's trying to notice those changes in the individuals that you're around, your friends, because quite rightly, they excuse me, they probably do look happy and probably are the strongest member of your group, but deep down, do you actually know how they're feeling? And it is all about asking twice, and he promoted that on there, which was absolutely fantastic. But
can you
I think
tell us again what that was called?
It's Our Silent Emergency. It was Roman Kemp, the radio DJ. I think it was on a couple of weeks ago now, and he was talking about his director, who was his best mate. He was actually on air delivering his breakfast show when he actually found out that his director had taken his life. And he showed some videos of them being together before that and happy and laughing and playing football, and no one had noticed any particular signs. You've only got to look at Robin Williams.
I was just about to say the same thing.
Just got to look at Robin Williams. He took his life in 2014, and you would just look at him and think he was happy, got everything in the world. So you don't know what's going on behind that smiley face.
You don't know, but it was interesting because I watched a string of interviews that he'd done from the 80s to date, and actually he did talk about it. He talked because he talked about alcohol and drug abuse. Yeah. And how that affected him. He then carried that on, didn't he? And he had that sense of, I've talked about this before, I've struggled with this, and this is what I'm like when I'm on cocaine, and this is what I'm like. And he uses his humour to talk about it. But actually, he sat down and just had a kind of a very frank discussion with the interviewers, even as far back as the 90s. So if people like him can do it, I suppose, again, he's entertainment, isn't he? He's not your construction worker that's opened up and...
No, but with regards to Robin Williams and his films, the way you look out for him, look at him in the films, and the way he's always happy or he's always making you laugh.
A lot of
the uncertainty with himself was he didn't actually realise till he got a diagnosis that he had actually got Lewy body disease. And he... The weekend before he took his life, he had absolutely amazing weekend with his wife, and due to his health reasons, they actually it was all on a documentary called Robin's Wish, and due to the health reasons, they actually shared separate bedrooms. But what he said was they'd had a fantastic weekend together. I think they were watching TV in her bedroom, and before he went to bed, he just said, "Good night, my love," and went off to his own room. And it wasn't until the next morning, later on the next morning, that his assistant found him. They thought he was having a lay-in, and it got to, I think it was about 10 o'clock or something in the morning, and they realised that he wasn't having a lay-in, and that's when they found he'd taken his own life. So it's what's going on behind that smiley face and behind that laughter. You don't know, and you don't know from the colleagues that you work with. It's a difficult one because one in four people experience mental health issues each year. So you don't know who's next to you when you're in the office environment, who is struggling. And that's more so when we come to look at working from home. It's keeping in touch. It's checking in with individuals. And also it's important that we have our own routines, that we keep to a routine.
I was just about to say to you, what do you do then? What can people do to ensure that they are looking after their own mental well-being? Because there's working from home, like you say, it's got its own stresses.
Definitely.
It really has. And of course, the cutoff socially, in some instances, it could be beneficial because actually you don't have to put on that front all day, every day. So maybe.
Yeah, and no makeup unless you're having a Zoom.
Yeah, and I haven't even bothered now. I'm not on video, so I don't need to worry. But it's taken a lot of that kind of how you present yourself. And I've definitely found working from home that actually being able to just switch off the camera and just go, ugh.
It's funny you say that. There's quite a few times that you're on a Zoom meeting and someone does switch the camera off, you're eating your breakfast or having your lunch or whatever. You're still interacting, but it is difficult because you've gone through the, especially now, more so because more people are working from home. You've gone through that situation where you're working with lots of people in different offices and you're probably driving office to office. And now your work drive, if you like, is probably from your kitchen to your office or your bedroom to the lounge. And so you haven't got that congestion to go through in the morning. So that's probably better. But if you are at home and you are alone, you need to still keep up that routine because the roller coaster of emotions we've already had by the fact we're to stay at home and work from home and socially distance, etc. You've still got to keep in touch, whether that be via a Zoom link like we're doing now or by picking up the phone. I think it's important that companies look at keeping in touch with their employees if they are working from home, even if it's just a regular, like a 10-minute Zoom call, how are we doing today, that kind of thing, and keeping in touch, because you can lose your days and you can lose your weeks.
Day is half the time.
No, exactly. And I can't believe we're now in April. It seems like it was only Christmas a few days ago. It just seems to have gone, but it is staying connected. And that's why I'm passionate about it's not physical. It's physical distancing, not socially distancing. You do need to keep in touch with people. Taking care of yourself, so remembering to have breaks. Oh, I know I'm as bad as the next person. I can sit and we can do one Zoom to another and before the days run out.
Yeah, you've forgotten to eat. for example.
Yeah. Or if you are at home, you're probably closer to the fridge, so you're probably eating a little bit more than you probably would. So it's all about taking care of yourself, taking that time out. I'm an advocate for holistic therapies. I love aromatherapy oils. I love relaxation and meditation. And the biggest thing that we have, which is free, is breathing. And it's breathing properly. It costs us nothing. And
I'm going to do that now, just because.
Isn't breathing.
I just need to breathe.
So breathe and regulate your breathing is fantastic. If you've got anxiety, just take a few minutes out. But it is all about routine, and it's setting yourself so you've got an office space. You've got, whether it is your dining table or whether it is a proper office, just having that office space and then being able to close that down at the end of the day, turn things off and leave it, and still having that structure as if you were going into the office at 9 o'clock, finishing at 5 or whatever, because and in particular construction doesn't work on those hours, but starting and finishing, having a break and switching off. You've still got to do that.
Hard though, it's so hard when you're not a very routiney person, like someone
It is, but
work keeps your routine there. It gives you that purpose.
It does give you routine, but just think about this. You'd never let your phone run out of battery, would you?
No.
You plug your phone in every night, so why not recharge yourself and shut off?
That's a really good way of looking at it. You wouldn't. No, you wouldn't, would you? You wouldn't expect to keep having music on all day or a film on all day on your phone and still expect it its battery to last the whole day.
Exactly. And when you're working from home, have the radio on. Have some music on. I know I've spoken to a lot of people over the last 12 months that have said that they've got their anxiety levels have risen because of all the COVID news that's on the telly and all the reports, and they've had to limit themselves to what they listen to. And I totally agree. Personally, me, I will listen to a Downing Street bulletin if I know there's going to be a change or if it's an important thing. Other than that, I just put the radio on, listen to music. It's good to listen, to hear somebody else's voice.
But there's an element of that kind of, I always like it to people say, you know, why live music? Why is live music better than recorded music? I've got the best speakers, I can get it. And it's just not the same. There's something about how the vibrations travel in a room full of people that are talking and laughing that just, and with the one way, not necessarily one way mic on a computer, but that kind of, one's interrupting the other and you laugh, but then there might have been four other people laughing, but you didn't hear because you were laughing loudest. And
yeah,
there is a massive element that is missing from online talk.
Definitely. It's the interaction. It's the atmosphere. Because if one person starts laughing, the next person starts laughing. I turn around and say, it's probably not politically correct, but in relation to men's mental health and looking at statistics, I normally turn around and say, I'm sorry, guys, but unless it swells up or it drops off, you do nothing about it. Not politically correct, but it gets the message home, and they always laugh, but they always agree.
But even if it swells up half the time, they just don't tell anyone. Oh my God, if it drops off, it's more obvious. But that is the thing, though, isn't it? Men, I think, particularly are a bit more, if they can see it, they can understand it. And we've got to change that mindset. It's not like we're different breeds. We are still human and we still have the brain capacity. And this is another thing I think we do. We generalize, don't we, that men don't have the capacity for what they do.
They do.
You have the capacity to retrain your brain just the way I did through cognitive behavioural therapy. There's no different. Same brain. We don't.
We don't. And it's just the fact that females tend to speak up first and tend to then go and do something about it and make that doctor's appointment. I've dealt with situations for a variety of different reasons. It could be bereavement, it could be self-harm, social anxiety, that kind of thing. But I found that when you get that male colleague at your door come to speak to you, at that point you need to stop everything, because it could have taken them a week, a month, a year, 2 years,
10 years.
To build up that courage to come and speak to you. And at that point, that you need to support them.
You've just tapped on a statistic that I read, that 75% of mental illness, excluding dementia, obviously, as we know that's more accurately described as neurological progressive. Normally by the age of, is it typically doesn't occur before the age of 30.
Yeah.
But 75% of mental illness starts before the age of 18.
Exactly.
So these
yes.
things can be picked up nice and early.
Mm.
And if you are willing to sacrifice yourself to the, or let yourself, allow yourself to, what's the word, be, to access mental health, well-being, resources, ways of thinking, things like that, as early as your late teens, then we could end up with a lot less people struggling in their adulthood.
Yeah, because it's all about education.
That's
and
it's
educating people to be open about their feelings and that it's okay to express your feelings. Quite rightly, like you said, mental illness starts before the age of 18. It can have, you've only got to look at what's just come out recently to do with the footballers that has come out into the news recently, the footballers and the football coaches, etc. Mm. They were under 18 when this happened, and now they're post 50.
Yeah.
And they're only talking about it now. It is a lot of situations that come out further down the line have happened in the younger age range, happened when you were a child, and you've done nothing about it because you felt the shame or the guilt or told not to speak about it. And it's
definitely
only later on that it's coming out.
Definitely in people my age, that 40 to 49, I lived with parents who, both in their time, my mum didn't suffer with mental health issues particularly, but went through any difficult time hiding it from us kids. They did not want to upset us. And when I first had an upset with my son, because I'm a single mum, and she said to me, whatever you, don't let him see you cry. And I just said, I don't think I disagreed with much, my mum said. I didn't dare, but I said to her, no, I'm sorry, I completely disagree. I said, I won't let him ever feel that I can't cope, cry in front of him. But to actually be upset by something he's done to me, if I'm affected by that, surely that makes him a more rounded person. That makes him able to deal with people crying. That was the thing for me. The first time I ever saw either of my parents cry, I was 16. I was terrified.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, my whole world's fallen out all of a sudden. The people that are supposed to be strong, and I don't think many people are parenting like that anymore. I think a lot more people, I hope a lot more people are parenting with more honesty emotionally. I think our kids are emotionally more intelligent than we are.
Yeah, I think there's more mindfulness being delivered in education and in the work school settings.
Yeah.
There's a lot more of that now and a lot more of raising awareness. And there are a lot of organisations out there where you can access support and you can go and talk. You've got online chat sessions that you can just log on to and you can just listen if you don't want to speak, but you can hear other people's experiences. And I think that's the thing. You've got to understand that you're not alone. You are not alone on this journey. It's the understanding that we all transition through every day on various different levels of mental health and well-being. You can wake up in the morning, be absolutely totally buzzing, set to do the day, all well and good, and then all of a sudden your boss walks in, drops a bombshell or comes in, someone's not very happy, and what does that do to your health, your well-being? Your mindset then thinks, oh great, and that gives the buzz that you had when you woke up, that then affects you. So it's understanding
the rest of the day.
Exactly.
Maybe you just need to call somebody, access one of these services and say, something's just happened and I feel like the rest of my day is going to be ruined. And they are there to just inject there, just nip it in the bud there and then, aren't they? And do you think men particularly will benefit more from the one-to-one services than any kind of maybe education or group sessions? Men Shed's an interesting one, because are they actually admitting, because that seems to be the issue, are they actually admitting they need help with their mental health and well-being by turning up to these things? Or are they actually just saying, I'm just supporting something nice that's going on in this community, and I'm willing to accept people from all walks of life with all sorts of issues, blah, blah, blah? you know.
I think it depends on the person. I've had conversations in the past with Michael about accessing the support and accept the men's shed thing's great because you're getting out and about as well. They've got an allotment and they've got all sorts of things.
And I've got some
doing.
Information about something that they're doing over Easter that I'm going to share with the listeners as well after.
I think one of the things that might be holding some men back is if they are a director of a business or a senior manager in a company. And I think there might be that apprehension that if they attend a group, maybe some of their employees will be in that same group. And then yes. Is that okay for them to admit that they are having struggling with their well-being and their mental health? Is that okay?
It's a sign of weakness, don't they?
They do, yes. But I totally agree. And it's looking at the accessing what support they can access as well. Because it should be all encompassing, but I can understand that if you are a director of a business, you maybe don't want to attend the same kind of men's group or talking therapy that maybe one of your employees is on.
Sorry, go on. I was just going to say, do you not think, though, so I'm just looking at it and thinking, if I went along to one of the groups, Safe Places, I've told them I would definitely be popping in there when they're open to group people. And I'm not particularly struggling at the moment, but I do feel like it's a fantastic service and I want to go along there. And we did discuss very briefly, you know, I think I'd be surprised who I saw there. Mm. Do you not think if I went there and my head that said that to me 5-6 years ago was there, would I not be like, wow, he's really grown as a person. Wow, mm-hmm. What a thing he's offering that he can now interact with these services. That just makes him, he's just upskilled, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
That may be where we need to be pushing that director's thing.
It's changing mindset, changing the thinking.
The change that you want to see.
Yes, yeah. And I personally think if you were to go along to some kind of talking therapy or even a social group, don't call it a talking therapy, but a social group, organise that, and you actually saw your boss there that had come along, I would embrace it. I just think it'd be absolutely fantastic because that would show the ethos of the business had moved to support mental health and wellbeing. To listen to their body as to what their body needs and just to be true to yourself and getting outside. We all know that getting outside this time last year when we went into the first lockdown and it was sunny and it was absolutely amazing, we all felt pretty good because even if we were on furlough, we thought, yep, this is nice, going to sit in the garden, or if we were working from home. And then I think obviously going into the last time when the weather wasn't so good, it has a detrimental effect. But we have had these stipulations enforced on us, so we can't do anything about it other than deal with it. And we're not stuck at home, we're safe at home. And I think that's what we need to think about. But it's how we actually respond to those instructions. No different to if someone has lost their job through COVID, through redundancy, etc. It's how we actually react to that situation. So we can't control that instruction, but we can turn a positive spin on it. So get out there, get some fresh air, keep in contact with people, don't socially distance, physically distance,
yes,
and increase that conversation. The amount of people that are out there that are not talking to each other, and you think, oh, they must be busy because they've not contacted me. Just send that message. The thing I struggle with is if someone is off with mental ill health and wellbeing from work, we should still contact them, because if you're off on maternity leave, you have keeping in touch days. So why not have keeping in touch days for wellbeing reasons? Just because a person's not got a plaster on it, not using crutches, not had to have an operation for something, doesn't mean that they're not struggling, because they are. But a tip I would suggest is don't ring them if they're off with poor mental wellbeing. Send them a text. Say, fancy coming out for a cup of tea? Okay, we're struggling at the moment, but keeping in touch, give us a call, and just that, or turn around and say, well, I'm going to give you a call in an hour. Is that okay? Because if you've got someone that's off with mental ill health, if their phone rings and they're not having a great day, they might not want to answer it. But if they see a text, they'll respond to that text when they feel ready.
When they feel ready. And it's some time to allow. It's almost like the one thing you need, which is communication, is the one thing you can't cope with at that time. But if you just keep the line open almost for people. And it's really interesting you're saying that, because that's exactly what another member of staff from the same school did for me. Mm. Her name's Georgina, and she did exactly that. She called me every couple of weeks, dropped me a text, fancy meeting up for a coffee. Yeah. And she was doing the job that senior management potentially should have been doing. But as long as someone's doing it, as long as you be the person that supports.
Exactly, because so many people are turning around and telling me, no, the boss has told me not to contact them because it will make them worse. That's a load of rubbish. That is actual rubbish, because if someone has mental ill health, and especially if they're living at home alone and don't have any social interaction, you need to keep that link, that line open. Mm. And when we can go and play golf again, just send them a text if they're into golf, to fancy go and play a game of golf or game of football or just go for a walk.
Especially with men, you don't have to talk about it.
No.
You don't have to talk about it, just get out.
Exactly. Or do you want to come down the allotment or whatever? Get on your bike, something like that. And you don't have to discuss anything, but it's just that connection, getting out there and getting some fresh air.
It's so weird, because we've highlighted two words that we highlighted on the last podcast, and this is only our second podcast, or the second one I've hosted anyway. And we said connection and acceptance, and they are absolutely key to everything you've shared with us today as well.
Exactly, yeah. Just do what makes you happy, be true to yourself, and just be you. And that's the message that I just want to share, because it is okay to be not okay.
Yeah. We said that last week as well. I said, for want of a better phrase, because it can be taken as a bit of a, it doesn't mean anything. A bit like you were saying with the committing suicide, I don't think people actually think about what they're saying. It's just a phrase that means someone took their life, someone's dead because they chose to take their life. But with mental ill health, particularly in poor health, it's very much about those specific words that you say. Be really careful with it.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. Definitely is. And just to say one last thing, it's Mental Health Awareness Week, the 10th to the 16th of May. And this year, the theme is all about nature. And so it's all about connecting, being active, keeping learning, giving and taking notice. So becoming aware of your surroundings and aware of the world and how things are going.
So we'll have some sort of input from you on Mental Health Week when it comes around. I think that'll probably be a special extra long podcast potentially. But that's fantastic. Thank you very much for your time today. It's been really interesting talking to you.
Thank you.
And you've given us lots to think about, so much appreciated.
You're welcome. No problem. I hope it's helped.
Brilliant. Yeah. I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will help somebody somewhere. That's all that we can ask, isn't it?
Exactly. If someone can take a little bit of something from a conversation, that's always great.
So that's the end of our second episode from Tonic Talk. Thank you to Barbara Mayhew from Phoenix Business and Training Consultancy for joining us. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our second podcast. We can't wait to bring you more episodes, insights, and on staying positive with mental health and general well-being. But before we say goodbye, we have an extra special treat. We have a song by Aaron Berry. It's particularly poignant, seeing as we've been discussing men's mental health with Barbara. It's also worth mentioning that they should be expanding the Tonic Health Men's Shed offering after Easter. For the past couple of years, a men's shed group have been meeting on an allotment space at the edge of Spalding Town Centre. They grow seasonal vegetables, they've built their own shed, polytunnel, coal frame, and I believe they even have bees. Which is fabulous. And they've also been known to meet up as a group for breakfast from time to time too. The group also has printing equipment, so they print directly onto t-shirts, mouse mats, mugs, just g- giving them something else to do to keep them occupied, especially over the winter months. That's been very popular, I believe, when the allotment isn't quite so appealing. But after Easter, they'll be starting up the very own Men's Shed meeting group, a space for guys to meet up and drink tea and coffee, biscuits, chat, read, play games, whatever. They'll be meeting up at Tonic Health every Thursday afternoon. So if you want any more details about that, please get in touch with Ruth, Safe Places team, or follow the South Holland Men's Shed Facebook page, and you'll be able to find out everything there. Bye from me. This is Aaron Berry. It's okay to cry. I've gone away now, but I'm not in pain. Life has changed now, won't ever be the same. I've set sail now, but I won't be far away, because I love you. Dark days, I'm that big ray of sunshine, and I'm the teardrop that's always on your face. Sometimes it's okay to cry if that's what gets you through.
For now, you just keep pushing on, because I love you.